You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Should religion be kept out of our schools, or is there a place for religion? As long as you have careful policy guidelines in our schools. 011-883-0702. Let's unpack those questions right now in Johannesburg. And Cape Tonians, you're more than welcome to join the conversation on 021-446-0567. Joining me for this discussion are a couple of guests. First, Hans Petersen in Cape Town is the chairperson of OGOD, Organization for Religious Education and Democracy. Hans, goeiemôre and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Yusebus. Thank you for inviting me.
It is only a pleasure, sir. Thank you for agreeing to come on. Joining us also is the CEO of the Federation of Governing Bodies of South African Schools, Paul Kolditz. Paul, thank you so much as well for coming on to this discussion today.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hans, I want to start with you. In the public space, we are supposed to come together, philosophically speaking, and have a plurality of different identities and values, etc. It's not the same as being at home or being at church on a Sunday, where you can clearly have your own identity, your own praxis, your own rituals. For that reason, would it be a good idea to say that our schools should ideally be completely secular and religion has no place in them in a diverse society?
You touch on a number of points, Eusebius, and I need to explain one or two concepts first.
That's okay. Go ahead, Hans. Take your time.
The term secular does not mean without religion. It simply means not preferring a specific religion. In other words, it is neutral towards religion. South Africa is a secular state, but it clearly says in the Constitution that everybody is entitled to live his own religion. So secularity as such does not mean or does not imply anti-religion. So for a school to be secular, as we have in Cape Town, there's one well-known one, Waterford High, they are a secular school, but they do allow religions and religious observances in school. Coming back to your question then, should that be allowed in a public space? Most certainly, yes. The public space is there for all ideas, all rituals, all concepts to be discussed and be entertained and lived out in the way that people do in the commons as such. The problem with schools, however, is that in a school environment, you take away the parent from the child and then give someone else the power, who is in a very trusted relationship with this child. You give him the power to influence the child, and you have no control over that because you as the parent is not there. So in the public space, as we would normally say, on Facebook or Twitter, wherever, anybody can reply to what you are saying, and the child is not exposed to a one-sided view. The danger comes in schools. If the teacher who is not educated to teach religious instruction, if they then become implicit in teaching their views or in imprinting their views on the children of South Africa. So please get this straight. Oh God has never, ever asked to remove religions from schools. Not in our court papers, not in public, never. All we wanted was religious to have equal treatment in schools or equal value, so that any person of any religion or none will feel equally welcome in a public school.
That sounds pretty reasonable to me, Paul.
Yes, I think one must distinguish the best way to do it is with reference to the United States, where you have a strict wall of separation between state and the religion. We don't have that in South Africa. In South Africa, our constitution in subsection 1 guarantees the right to freedom of belief, freedom of religion, freedom of opinion. And that applies to both the public sphere and the private sphere. So you don't leave your religion or your beliefs at home when you enter the school. You take them with you. And yes, we're also saying create that space in the schools, not on an equal basis. The Constitution requires on an equitable basis for learners and everybody in the school to conduct their religious observances on an equitable basis. You won't be able to provide equality for all religions in every single school in this country. Equality, equitability in this sense means that if you have a majority religion in a particular school and a small minority, give recognition to them and give them the opportunity to also have and express their religions, but on an equitable basis. Provide the space for them, provide the opportunity for them, but if you have in a school of 1,000 learners, 90% of one particular religion, you'll use the school hall for that, and you'll make available a classroom or library or whatever for the minority grouping.
Do you have a problem with that scenario? The last one you just sketched.
Not at all,
Paul.
No, I don't have a problem with that at all.
So I don't understand it. Then it doesn't seem like there's any deep disagreement between the two of you, because Hans, presumably it is possible for a community to decide that the dominant religious identity in that community may be, I don't know, Islam, for example, Catholicism. And at the same time, as long as I am allowed to opt out as a child who self-identifies as atheist, agnostic, or some other denomination, then there shouldn't be a practical problem.
I don't agree with that statement, Eusebius, and finally, that is what the court needs to decide on, and that's what we are waiting for, the verdict, which hopefully will be by next month. The issue here is, if a school specifically sides with a specific religion, it means that the state infrastructure and taxpayer money is spent on advancing a particular religion. Now, it's very easy to say, yes, but we accommodate everybody else, but then everybody else becomes less of a citizen. In other words, you are now accommodated in a small classroom somewhere, while the majority of the school is now singing and dancing towards with gospel music, playing in assembly over the loudspeakers of the school. So immediately that child is a lesser child. We have no problem with religious observances being conducted in the school. Our problem lies with the school itself arranging those observances. In other words, a school can have a normal school day, and organizations from the community, which would represent what the community entertains, they can approach the school and say, we would like to celebrate the holy day, be it Eid Mubarak or Ascension Day. We would like to celebrate that on your school grounds. And then every child who wishes to attend that, even if he's from a different religion, will be welcome to do so. That is what the Constitution and the national policy prescribes. It is not saying that the school can be a Christian school, for example, that accommodates others. Just as no school can say, this is a school for heterosexuals, but we will accommodate homosexuals, or we are a white school and we will accommodate people of other color. That is not in the Constitution. The Constitution says the state itself, in other words, the school as a public entity, will not partake in advancing or privileging a specific religion. So this is a subtle but extremely important point. Every child in that school should not have the same time perhaps afforded to him, but that's irrelevant because it's not the school time that we are talking about here. Anybody else from the community, any religious organization or trusted individual, may arrange for religious observances at a specific school, and one would expect that the requests from the community would represent the community, and that is what gives it the equitability.
Okay, let's take a quick breather there. 17 minutes after 10, how do you see it? Should religion completely be left at the gates of the school, or is there, with the requisite policy guidelines, a place for religious identities and praxis in our schools? 011-883-0702, have your say. And in Cape Town on the number 021-446-0567. It's 17 minutes after 10.
Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
20 minutes after 10, we are reflecting on the place of religion in our schools. I'm going to take your calls in a second. Hans and Paul, I don't understand how this court case has arisen. I'm going to ask you to explain to the public, Paul, because when I'm listening to your opening remarks, Paul, and I listen to how Hans is delineating his position philosophically, it seems to me as if, despite the adversarial nature of court systems in our country, that there isn't as deep disagreement between you guys as meet the eyes, if all the reporting on the case is to be believed. Can you articulate to me, Paul, where you and Hans part ways?
Well, we part ways on the issue of the directional choice of the school. Hans's view appears to be that the school does not have the right to determine its own ethos or its own directional choice. We say that Section 15.1, which guarantees the freedom of religion and belief, also extends to institutions, not only individuals, based on the correct interpretation of the Constitution. Therefore, we say that a school has the right to determine its own directional choice, align itself with a particular religion, provided that it doesn't offend Section 9 of the Constitution, the equality provision in the Constitution. So all the religions must be treated equally, but they not necessarily have to be included in the school's ethos. If you have, for example, a Christian ethos, a school with a Christian ethos, it still doesn't mean that they're entitled to discriminate or in any way differentiate between those that are Christians and those that are non-Christians or non-believers. Provision must be made for them, as I've said, on an equitable basis.
Okay, Hans, now which part of what Paul has just said is problematic for you?
I must first thank Paul that he's at least changed his opinion, because initially in all the press it was stated that Ogard wanted religion out of school. So finally, after, 9 years, I think at last the penny has dropped.
Well, you can call me Desmond Tutu and save you some money from the lawyers.
What is Paul arguing for now is that a school is supposed to be, as a juristic person, be able to choose its own religion. Now, the courts will decide on that, and we have a fair idea of what they will decide. So it's actually not irrelevant, but it's useless for us to argue the point here. The statement remains central that the school, as a state institution, remember, that is funded partly by the state, cannot apply the state's money and infrastructure to privilege a specific religion. And to our mind, that is what the opposition has been fighting for all the time, is simply for Christian supremacy in the public schools. Now, the court will prove us right or wrong the way that we understand, because it's not just about Article 15.1, but also 15.2 and Articles 14 and Article 9 about the privacy, about equal treatment of children, that the school as a state institution may not take sides on the question of religion. And that is repeated over and over in the national policy and in other acts of South Africa. So the school cannot choose to be a Christian or Muslim school. It can only say that we allow children to have their religions and religious observances and religious identity in the school, but the school is not a person that is capable of thought and conscience. Therefore, it doesn't choose its own religion. Now, I know Paul differs from Mrs. Bear, and I respect his difference, but that is what the courts will decide on eventually.
Okay, let's hear what our listeners have to say. Amy and Santon, welcome.
Hi, what I wanted to say is that schools are not only places for academic education, but they teach us socialization. And we know that South Africa is incredibly diverse and unique in the sense that we have relative religious harmony. And so schools have a unique opportunity to facilitate diversity, to facilitate appreciation, and to dispel prejudice and get rid of religious misgivings and misinformation. So it's a place where we can cultivate diversity and cultivate appreciation for diversity. It doesn't have to be an either-or situation. So for me, 20 years ago, growing up as a Baha'i kid in a majority Christian school and having kids telling you you're going to go to hell is a really difficult thing to process. But now kids learn about minority religions in life orientation and things like that. So those types of things change. And I think it's a really important role that schools have to be able to cultivate this appreciation for diversity.
But public schools are also public investments, and although we want there to be values that are overlapping even between people who have differences in terms of religious and other social identities, Amy, we also obviously want the schools to be as value neutral as possible, so far as that is possible, no?
Well, yes, of course, but in the same way that you teach history or you teach subjects that are social sciences,
yes,
you have the opportunity to teach people who are atheists believe this, people who are agnostic believe this, people who are Rastafari believe this, people who are Muslim practice in this way, et cetera, et cetera. So in order to...
No, I totally get you. Yeah, I totally get you. But I guess what I'm distinguishing, which is very useful to now move the conversation forward slightly, is that if we are more precise, I suspect we also need to, at some point in this debate today, distinguish between teaching different systems of religion, which can have benefits because that can teach you about people who are different to your own community, and religious activities at the heart of the school. I went to a primary school, and every Friday morning we were shipped off to Mass.
Yeah, I have friends who hate religion particularly for that reason now. They hate anything to do with religion because it was shoved on them and imposed on them.
Mm. Thanks, Amy. Thanks for your viewpoint. Peter in Musenberg.
Hi, look, the thing is that I understand that people have religious practice, but when a school adopts a religious character, what my experience has been, what are they doing to protect children from basically bullying and being picked on and religious oppression? I'll give you an example. My child went to a school that sees itself as majority Christian, okay? She got called by other children because of her belief, she got called the devil's child, you know? Because you're not going along with this Christian belief system. And the religion was normalized at the school, and I don't believe that the schools are then properly equipped to actually handle difference and protect that principle, you know? Having made the religion part of their practices.
Is that an inevitable problem, do you think, Peter? Or do you think that's a problem that arises due to the management that happens or doesn't happen at a particular school?
I don't think it's inevitable, but I do think that if you... I think it's a very common problem, firstly, in my experience, speaking to other parents and things like that. And I think that it's one that... when a religion is normalized, that this is, you know, and even to the extent that some people believe that one can't have ethics besides having some kind of religious ethics, then I think it becomes a very widespread problem. So I think that, and also the other thing is with all of these things, in terms of teachers and dealing with these kind of dynamics, teachers who themselves are following a particular practice might not be well educated in terms of, being able to deal with issues of diversity. So if you have teachers who identify as Christian, they bring their Christian practice into the classroom with, like, regular prayers and things like that, you know, then it's not a welcoming environment for difference.
Okay, fascinating viewpoint. Thanks so much. I want to take more of your calls and also the views of my two guests. I've got Hans Petersen, Chairperson of Organization for Religious Education and Democracy, and Paul Kalditz, who is the CEO of the Federation of Governing Bodies of South African Schools. Should send them a bill for getting them closer to where they appear to have been in the legal papers. Paul, we live in a country that is predominantly Christian, and obviously we have done, well, depending on your orientation, we've done quite well, I think, to design a constitutional edifice that keeps church and state apart, and that is obviously quite secular in terms of making sure that religion doesn't necessarily inform public policy. But the truth of the matter is that you have millions of South Africans who do self-identify in some sort of religious way. It would be strange if our public schooling system did not reflect the dominant mores.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. The point is, again, that doesn't mean that one can or is allowed to discriminate against those who do not share your belief.
Yes. But that presumably is something that is true of all forms of discrimination rather than being something that is more likely to be the case just because a school has a particular religious identity.
Yes, indeed. The point is, one must distinguish also, I've listened to your callers, one must distinguish between what the official directional choice of a particular school is and the what the individuals, the teachers and the children in the school do and say. They will say and do that irrespective of what the directional choice of the school is. That's the nature of the human being. To denigrate others in terms of their belief systems. Now, the important thing is, and we've given various examples of what's happening in the schools in the court papers, where schools have decided on a particular directional choice, have accommodated on an equitable basis other learners, and it's working wonders. It's working perfectly. It's creating that awareness about the differences between different cultures and different beliefs, the systems, and in the process, it contributes to the celebration of diversity. Mm. It's working perfectly in all our member schools, at least.
Hans, how do we prevent the bad cases from cropping up where that might not be the case? And the truth of the matter is that all institutions at work, educational institutions, universities, schools, they may have their stated values that seem incredibly accommodating if you pick up the brochure as a prospective parent. But you also have what education experts refer to, as you know, the hidden curriculum. And very often schools may pay lip service on the website to the idea of plurality, but in reality, the institutional norms that have been shaped over decades in some of our schools, over 100 years, may well prioritize one religious set of values over another, despite what it putatively might say in mission statements.
You are very correct there, Eusebius, and this touches directly on what Paul has just said. In the court papers, they showed, if I remember, 8 or 9 schools that supposedly accommodate learners of other beliefs very well. I don't agree with that, but be that as you may. The point being that he had to find other schools to try and convince the court that it can work in schools, whereas the 6 schools that we named in the papers in our motion to interdict, they couldn't find examples there. So obviously something is amiss in the system. And you're quite right when you say the hidden curriculum. We have teachers who, based on their private beliefs, decide not to teach what is in the syllabus. Now, that is not what the national policy intended when it said that religions are welcome in schools. It didn't mean with that in your living out your religiosity as teacher, that you may then decide to denigrate parts of science or history or not teach it to your children because this is the way that you live out your religion. If your religion is that important to you, then you should become a preacher, not a teacher. Yes, you may be a teacher, but then at least stick to the syllabus. I'm quite surprised and excited about your callers, AD and Peter, that called in. Obviously, they reflect the wishes of society. We need to promote diversity, and the national policy is very clear on that. It says that in order to promote this diversity, we make the schools neutral towards religion and then allow the churches. Because remember, we claim to have 86%, that was said in the court, 86% of South Africa are Christians, adhering to Christian values, and they want Christian values in the schools. But we also have one of the highest crime statistic rates in the world. So obviously there's something amiss between us claiming to be good, valuable Christians and what's happening in the country. And this is what the Constitution allows. It says, let's open up the schools so that the churches and the mosques and whatever religious institutions out there who claim to be for South Africa and their values are so important, let's invite them then into the schools and come and do their work here instead of handing over their responsibility to the school.
Yeah.
Because then the state becomes involved.
Okay, let's go to Colin in Buffalsdrift. Welcome to the show, Colin. What are your reflections?
Thanks, Eusebius. I'd just like to say that, yeah, you've covered quite a bit of what I wanted to say already, that South Africa as a whole is a Christian country. And therefore, everybody, or not should abide by it, but everybody should follow that. But then accommodate, obviously, the other religions in your life orientation. That's where the gentleman that just spoke now, in connection with bringing in your rabbis, your imams, and everything in, they can come into those classes during school time or after school if necessary and discuss their different religions, but obviously keep the whole overrunning religion a Christian one, because we are a Christian country. If you go to the United Arab Emirates or any of the other countries which are Muslim based, then their main religion in their school would obviously be Muslim.
Sure. Let's go to Claremont. Hello, Carol.
Good morning. I absolutely agree with the gentleman that spoke about neutrality. My thought is, why not leave the teaching of religious ideologies to institutions that do just that? Rather teach children at school freedom of thought, i.e. how to think, not what they ought to think.
Isn't it possible...
an indoctrinated belief.
My apologies, Carol. I didn't mean to interrupt. I thought you were done.
No, that's it.
Isn't it possible, Carol, for me to teach a kid critical thinking and through the quality of my pedagogy to allow their child to be comfortable to form their own identity over the 12 years of being entrusted into my school, and still teach them about Islam, about the Jewish faith, about Dawkins, about agnostics, about religions that are rooted in African belief system? Why do we fear that any teaching of the world systems of religion will inherently constitute a kind of indoctrination?
I don't know. I think that when you're looking at one particular religion over another, then it is indoctrination. But the way you put it, it would also be fine. It would be like looking at history.
Sure. So it depends how it's done.
At various, but yeah, that would take a lot of time and a lot of labor, I think.
That's true. That's absolutely true. Thank you, Carol. Thanks so much for that. Hans?
Can I come in there, ECB?
Of course you can.
And just to make it clear that the religion and education policy and the curriculum actually make provision for the teaching of religion education. In other words, in life orientation, children are taught about the different religions in the country, that are in the country. So that part is covered. But again, when you go to, you have religious education, which could be seen as indoctrination, but that is not allowed. But if we're saying, if the majority, or in the example of some of those six schools, almost 100% of the parents want their children to be given religious education in the school, that may be done as a non-promotional subject outside of the curriculum.
Mm. I wonder whether we can just move the conversation onto a slightly different topic, and I hope it's not a blick. We keep talking, and some of my callers as well, and I'm a little bit embarrassed in a country that is majority Christian, how many of my callers and my Twitter timeline are virulent atheists and agnostics like me. I hope we can make the circle bigger in this conversation and have more people actually speak to their own belief systems and not just about Dawkins or whoever your favorite atheist might be. But I want to interrogate the notion of neutrality, even as a concept, Hans. It seems to me that one of the myths we do need to talk about, and then after you've opined, Paul can come in as well, is the idea that if you were not going to have any religious identity, any teaching of religion, even as world systems, as a form of history, for example, that you're creating these beautiful, neutral, multicultural, tolerant citizens. But the truth of the matter is that chances are, if Master MacIsaac is the high school teacher that was the one entrusted with the education of Hans or Paul's child, you're not going to be unaffected by him being a liberal egalitarian who loves the work of, you know, people like John Stuart Mill and then more contemporary liberals. In other words, all teachers and all schools inevitably role model values, including moral values. Some of us do it explicitly. Some of us just do it more subtly.
That is perfectly fine, Eusebius. We want people to live their lives and children to appreciate how people are. In other words, if you are, be it atheist or Christian or Roman Catholic even, be who you are and lift it up, but don't get the school to side on your side and advance your interests. So, and I'm coming back to what I said earlier, that the teacher-child situation is a very powerful one that we need to protect. We can't take all challenges out there. Please, I'm not expecting a utopia where nobody has a view. That is certainly not what I'm pleading for, but we're not, also not a society where all animals are created equal, but some are more equal than others. Eventually, the pigs get exposed. We need the schools to understand that we are neutral. We invite religious organizations in to do the observances. We leave religious instruction, which is teaching children how to be religion, to the home, to the community, to the church, the mosque, etc. So if they don't do their work properly, then it's not for the state schools to step up and try and do their work for them. Values can be religion neutral. We know that religions don't have the market space on values. The Constitution proves that. We have
absolutely
some values there. They don't need to be associated with a religion. So we don't. That doesn't mean religious values are irrelevant. It just means that religion doesn't have the monopoly on values, and some religious values are really not good for our country, for our diverse society. And I just want to touch very quickly on what Colin said, that the UAE is predominantly Muslim. Yes, the difference is that the UAE is a theocracy.
Absolutely.
If you would like to live in a theocracy, be my guest.
Yeah.
South Africa is a secular, non-religious, but religious-friendly democracy.
Paul, I want to bring you back in here. I mean, I agree with Hans there, but I really, really feel that I wish we'd had this conversation 5 years ago. You guys would be fighting less legalistically about this. You surely would agree with Hans. Hans is very aware that religion matters deeply, but also that there is an inequality in the relationship between teacher and pupil, and that is where it's important for the state to safeguard what values get into the heart and mind and gets imprinted onto the blank slate walking into a school.
Well, let's just give a step back and address the issue of neutrality. I believe there is no such thing as neutrality. Every single person, as you've just said about yourself, has a particular world and life view. And the challenge is, and the opportunity we have in the Constitution, is that is not suppressed. And not to suppress that particular world and life view, to recognize it and create a situation where that is not abused, but if it is abused, address the individual who is abusing it. And schools are very aware of that. So, because a teacher does not operate in isolation, teacher operates under supervision of a head of department or a deputy principal, a principal governing body. So if there is a particular problem with a teacher abusing his or her position, address that issue. Don't try to address the world and life view, the directional choice.
So, Paul, are you suggesting that when abuse happens, those are rare cases? A Muslim girl comes and suddenly a hijab requires her to be given the equivalent of an apartheid-level pass?
Well, you're speaking to the Northcliffe issue now.
And there are many of them. The no-stud case in the Constitutional Court is a classic one.
Yes, indeed. And what the Constitutional Court said in the no-stud case is don't regard difference between people as a parade of horribles, but celebrate the diversity. What the Constitutional case Constitutional Court also said in that particular case, and that's where I understand Northcliffe comes from, is to say you're not allowed to take the law into your own hands and simply just ignore the rules of the school. You must apply to be exempted on the religious or cultural grounds from complying with a particular rule. And in this particular case, what happened was that the girl applied and was given proof of the fact that she had applied and was given exemption. So anybody that would approach her or would address her for non-compliance with a particular rule could be provided with a proof that I have complied. I followed due process.
Okay.
I followed the prescribed procedure in getting exemption.
Okay.
That is what I understand the school does.
Okay, let's take a breather there, and then I'm going to speak to Steve Mabona, spokesperson for the MEC for Education in Gauteng. I think this is exactly the right moment where we're going to ask, what is government's view on this? What is the policy that schools are expected to, in fact, comply with? Steve, I'm coming straight to you on the other side of this break.
Eusebius Mackayser on 702 and Cape Talk.
If you've just joined us, you're catching the tail end of a conversation about the place of religion in our schools. And you'll have to listen back to the whole hour. It's been fascinating. We've only got a couple of minutes left. Steve Mabona now joins me, spokesperson for the MEC of Education here in Gauteng. Steve, what does government say?
Thank you very much, CVS. But I was listening to the conversation. It's quite very clear. Our schools are not operating outside the constitution. So we are in South Africa, and there must be tolerance of all religions. Hence, we are encouraging all the schools to have your religious policy, where we will then be, as government, when we review the policies, we look at the policy and check whether they conform to the constitution. There's no discrimination against any other religion, and hence we will then encourage religion to be respected in all the schools, and it doesn't matter which one it is. Hence, we will always encourage them to respect religion.
But let's talk practically. If a particular school wants to center a Christian ethos in its values, and that in turn may affect a whole range of things, a child tragically dies at the school, and there's a school chaplain that comes to assembly. That's a memory I have from when I was at Graham College Boys High in Grahamstown, for example. Or even a Catholic community, and they want to have Mass on a Friday. I mean, what does that mean in practical terms? Are those kinds of specific religious activities not allowed, or are they allowed with qualification?
Like, as I've indicated, remember, the schools are managed, as per the SASSA Act, are managed by the principal, HOD, and the SGB. So any conduct that is happening in any schooling environment, that would have been agreed upon by the school management team. So hence, it is important for us as the department to make sure that we know all the policies, code of conduct in our schooling environment, and we endorse as such. So it will be quite clear, it will be reflective in their policies that this is how they manage any eventuality that might have occurred. They do Mass, they do that. But everything that they would have been agreed upon, it will then be allowed, because you'll understand SGB represents the parents, and the principal will then represent the district and the department. So anything that it's agreed upon, then it will be allowed to happen in any schooling environment. Hence, the management of the school does not depend on one person.
Yeah, but in practice, we have horrible examples like the one Paul and I just threshed out before the break. If you are a Muslim girl going to school and you're wearing your religious garb that is important to your faith, And the school has a policy that says, no, no one will wear headscarves. And if you want to wear a headscarf, you've got to get permission. In theory, that seems the generous way is how Paul described it. You can make allowance for that by saying you can apply for that rule to be a rule that you are exempted from on the grounds of your individual alternative religious identity to what the rules are saying in the school. But that's quite onerous.
Because remember the school, they have a way of managing the school. I mean, that the Notcliffe incident, it's more on deviation from wearing, you know, school uniform. Because any school will say, our school uniform will entail this and that and that. The moment you deviate from that, then the other probably educators will be asking you, why probably are you deviating? You should be in a position to explain that I'm deviating because of 1, 2, 3.
Now, I get that, so, Steve. What I'm suggesting to you, just in the interest of time, let me rather be blunt about this. It is ridiculous for a Muslim girl to go to school having to explain in front of the class when everyone knows Megan is the Muslim girl in the child in the class. Now, you've got some teacher who's an atheist who doesn't like her or whatever the case might be, and now she has to recite her religious identity. We all know what family she comes from. So in practice, I mean, what you are saying makes complete sense to me theoretically, but in practice, it is horrible for a 12-year-old on a daily basis to have to explain why they're wearing hijab.
Definitely, it is horrible, and any conduct that is untoward must be immediately reported to the school management. Hence, when we visit the schools, because we are visiting schools now, to say if you are abused in any other way, be it sexual, be it assault, be it anything, you need to be in a position to report to the principal, report to the HOD, so that teacher must be then be taken through the necessary disciplinary processes, because really that cannot be allowed in any schooling environment. So we'll always emphasize that the learners must be in a position to can report such incidences. It's not acceptable that one will be humiliated in front of the class. And the explanation that we got from the school was that they are trying to manage the deviation and those cards were immediately withdrawn. You'll find a way of managing that process, but not to humiliate or abuse any learner, because the schooling environment should be conducive for a learner to can perform.
Fair enough. Steve, we're going to leave it there. Hans and Paul, thank you so much for your time as well and for coming on the show.